And right now, it's time for the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
The immigration deal got a big push from President Bush yesterday. Whether that will help or hurt is not yet clear. Republicans said no to the no-confidence measure aimed at the attorney general, but subpoenas were announced today for two White House staffers as the investigation continues into the dismissal of those eight federal prosecutors. And how does campaign cash for an Alaska congressman lead to millions for a new road in Florida? Through Washington, D.C., of course. Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
Ken is NPR's political editor. He writes the weekly Political Junkie column on NPR's website and is our Political Junkie every Wednesday. If you have questions about this week in politics, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org, and there's a conversation underway on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And Ken, since we spoke last week, the compromise immigration bill all but died in the Senate. Then yesterday, President Bush raced back from Europe to march over to the Capitol and said, let's get this thing done.
That's right. Now, President Bush, with his 28% approval ratings, went to Capitol Hill and said, I want to use my political capital and try to make things happen. And that's the problem with a president who's so unpopular, plus the fact that the immigration bill itself is so unpopular with the Republican base. Saxby Chambliss, the very conservative Republican senator from Georgia, was booed by Republicans in his home state as a sellout. The emotions were running really strong against the bill, and it's questionable whether the president changed any minds when he went up to the Hill yesterday.
And at the same time, the Democratic leader, the majority leader in the Senate, Harry Reid, his enthusiasm for the bill is, can be questioned. But nevertheless, he's telling the president with whom this negotiation, this compromise was reached, look, you deliver me Republican votes, I'll bring it back on the floor.
Exactly. The problem is that if the president were in Albania, it might be go over pretty well, but not on Capitol Hill.
Watch yourself.
Sorry.
Can the president save this bill, do you think?
Well, you know, there's really a lot of anger about it, and it's not so much that it's just anti-immigration. It's just that there are a lot of complaints about the porous border, whether it's really improving the situation, whether it is indeed amnesty for the 12 million illegal aliens who are in this country already. So there's just a lot. It's hard to get legislation passed when the emotions are running so high.
Well, it seems to be hard to get enough Republican votes for this, an amendment that would draw enough Republicans without irritating the other side of the equation, the Democrats.
Exactly. And the President Bush really wants some kind of part of his legacy when he leaves office. And the best bet for it is a change in the way the immigration policies are run in this country.
Also in the Senate, the no confidence vote that was to be held on Alberto Gonzalez never happened. They couldn't get the 60 votes needed to you need 60 votes for almost anything controversial in the United States Senate, not just 50, but any lasting impact from that?
No. I mean, the Republicans said it was a political stunt, and it was. Democrats say that Alberto Gonzalez has politicized the Justice Department, and he has. So both sides do have a point here, but the point, of course, is that it's up to either President Bush to fire his loyal attorney general, or it's up to Alberto Gonzalez to fall on the sword. But Chuck Schumer and the Democrats passing a no-confidence bill is not going to change anything. It was about politics. But again, it just shows a dissatisfaction in the Senate with Alberto Gonzalez. And it was striking to me is that Republicans did not stand up and defend the attorney general. But basically, they said that the Democrats are playing politics and this is not what we should be doing. Also notable is that seven Republicans did vote for the no confidence vote, five of whom are up for re-election next year, four of whom are in really tough races.
And you could hear people like Susan Collins, the Republican from Maine, very reluctantly voting on the Democratic side on this, saying that she didn't have any confidence in Alberto Gonzalez.
Right. And she has a very tough race. Again, also Congressman Tom Allen is running against her. One of the more vulnerable Republicans up next year.
Let's see if we can get some callers on the line. 800-989-8255. 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. And this is Elvis. Elvis with us from Walla Walla, Washington. I love
How
saying
are you
that.
Today?
I'm fine.
My question is, how long will it take the Republicans to decide, or maybe they're already on the road to deciding this, that the president is enough of an albatross around their neck, he doesn't have to run again in 2008, that they're just willing to jump in him and his policies and start moving forward and taking care of their own interests.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they certainly don't want to dump his money-raising abilities. And, of course, all these senators who have been and House members who have been critical of the president on the war, on Alberto Gonzalez, on the immigration bill, when President Bush comes to their district or states for a fundraiser, they welcome him with open arms. Perhaps they'd rather not have it with cameras there. But, again, so he is a mixed sort. Unlike Ronald Reagan in 1988, who left office very, very popular, Bush's numbers are really, really low down. And if the Republican Party is to avoid the kind of year that they had in 2006 and in 2008, they're going to have to do what we saw in the presidential debate, basically more and more candidates distancing themselves from the president.
Well, is he actually still able to bring in large amounts of cash for them? And if so, why?
Well, he's still the president of the United States, and he still remains popular with the Republican base. I mean, 75%, some polls show that 75% of the Republicans still support the president, still support his conduct of the war, support the surge, things like that. But ultimately, in a general election, when you throw in independents and Democrats, that support disappears completely.
Well, is that Republican base shrinking at the same time?
It is, and that's where you'll find that if you look at the money raising, the candidates, the presidential candidates who've been raising money, every cycle until now, it was the Republicans who always raised the most money. You'll see at the end of the month, once again, as we saw the last quarter, that it's the Democratic candidates who are raising the most money, having the most donors, and raising the most enthusiasm.
Hmm. Elvis, thanks very much for the call.
Okay.
Let's retreat from presidential politics and get back to the business of pork for a little bit. There's a story out of Florida reported in the New York Times last week about a $10 million earmark for a new roadway near Fort Myers, courtesy of an Alaska congressman. The Naples Daily News first reported what is basically a case of political you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours 2 years ago. Joining us on the line is Julio Ochoa. He's a staff writer for the Naples Daily News. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And explain the players in this story. We have the congressman and the developer.
That's correct. Basically, the developer wants to build homes, but there's not really a road to reach his home, and he needs an interchange on Interstate 75. The congressman came in town, and I guess they had a little fundraiser for him and raised some money for him, and next thing you know, we have an earmark for this interchange, a study that could be done on this interchange.
And the curious thing is this congressman is not anybody from Florida, not somebody from that district, but Don Young of Alaska.
That's right. Actually, the congressman from our district won't even claim that he had anything to do with getting this money for us.
What a miracle, he said. Connie Mack Jr.
That's correct. That's correct. Kind of a strange thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is this $10 million actually for?
It's for a study of an interchange on Interstate 75 at Coconut Road. And basically, it just covers a study. There's actually, if we decide to build the interchange, it would take another $100 million or so, which we don't even have.
Mm-hmm. And there are county officials involved in all of this, too. They need to approve various spending elements. And there's been elections in Florida over the past 2 years. The county commission has changed.
That's right. The county commission has changed, and this issue does not seem to die. So every time there's a meeting of transportation officials, this subject comes up, and they keep talking about it. In fact, they're going to talk about it again on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Are the prospects, and we should point out that some say that constructing this interchange and more traffic on this road and the development there would hurt wetlands and other environmentally sensitive areas.
That's correct. The opposition believes that it could have seriously damaging effects on the environment to the east, where this developer would like to build about 4,000 to 8,000 homes.
Now, you reported first on this 2 years ago, so a lot of water has gone under the bridge, and a lot of traffic has not flowed on that off that interchange.
That's right, but still, they still are talking about it after 2 years, and there's still a big mystery since we have never gotten Don Young to speak to us about this.
So you presumably kept pestering him for some time for some illumination as to why he's so interested in this particular interchange in Florida.
That's correct. He's now calling it a recycled story that has no legs.
And what about the developer? How much money did he end up giving to Don Young?
Well, that we believe he gave about $1,000, but I mean, over the course, his family has donated, I believe, $200,000 in the 2006 election cycle.
And then the Times reported on this story last week. You must have been a little startled to open your paper there when you got to the office.
That's right. We're all a little bit surprised that the Times had decided to put this on their front page.
Anything happening with the story to justify? This is the journalistic equivalent of getting bigfooted, I think.
right. It's quite flattering, actually. Anything going? Did you ask if there was anything going on?
Yeah.
More with it?
Yeah.
They are gonna talk about it Friday, and we may see it. The whole thing be nixed, but actually, it looks like it may move forward. They're at this crossroads where they're like, should we accept $10 million and do a study of this thing, or should we turn down this, you know, free money, essentially, and you know, stick up our noses at the powers that be in Washington.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, Ken Rudin, this story of, well, you know, going down out of state for some fundraiser and coming back and proposing an earmark, is this unusual?
I'm not sure if it's unusual, only the fact that Don Young at the time was the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, and he was getting tons and tons of contributions from all over the country, from interests all over the country. But what's interesting is, one, it'd be interesting to see how powerful Don Young is now that he's in the minority. But two, there's also a political scandal going on, a bribery scandal going on in Alaska that could affect the dominant Republican Party that's been dominant for so many decades in that state. Ted Stevens' son is under investigation for a separate bribery investigation. Ted Stevens himself, his relationship with an oil company executive who may have done some work on his home. I mean, these people are God. Don Young has been in Congress since 73. Ted Stevens since 60. They've been there forever, and yet something seems to be changing in Alaska that may change the politics of the state.
Maybe they want to move from Florida and run from there.
There is a bridge that'll take them there.
I could. Julio Ochoa, thanks very much for being with us. Congratulations, bud.
It's been an honor.
Julio Ochoa, staff writer for the Naples Daily News in Florida. Ken Rudin is also with us here in Studio 3A. It's the Political Junkie. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get some listeners on the line. And let's go to Mike. Mike with us from San Leandro in California.
Hey.
Hey.
Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity.
Sure.
My question is about Alberto Gonzalez and really whether or not the Democrats are kind of following the wrong direction with him by focusing on the dismissal of the federal prosecutors. And my thought is what's much more important is the fact that he's really obviously intentionally misled Congress on a much more critical issue, which would be the wiretapping. And that came out recently where he testified to Congress previously that there was no significant internal debate about that wiretapping program. And now, as we know, not only was there a significant debate, it appears that the program was operating under rules that a pretty conservative attorney general,
John Ashcroft,
was very, very concerned about. And by saying, you know, that there was no significant debate to Congress, I mean, I don't know if perjury is the right term when you mislead or lie to Congress,
mm-hmm.
but it seems to me it's an impeachable offense. And if you look at the way he's misled Congress, both in that circumstance and in the federal prosecutor, you know, personally, I think the guy ought to be impeached, because clearly the president is never going to let this guy go. He's been with him for too long. He's been involved in everything from Texas on till today.
Well, just to suggest, Mike, if you can't get 60 votes for a vote of no confidence in a meaningless vote, impeachment seems a long stretch. But let me ask Ken Rudin, who knows more about this than I do.
Well, the problem is that, well, several things. The problem is the Democrats are going after Gonzalez on all these things that you mentioned, not only the U.S. attorneys, but, you know, the abuses at Guantanamo, the domestic surveillance that is certainly, as we've seen in testimony, there were internal questions. Gonzalez's testimony before the Senate has always been one of convolution and contradictions. He has never been accused of breaking any law. Nothing is, as Tony Snow said today, that no charges, he's never broken any law. But the real story to me may be the fact that if Gonzalez were to go, if he were to leave or be fired, whom does President Bush get to replace him, and what kind of a nominee could he pick that the Democratic-controlled Senate would confirm? Obviously, he wouldn't go the moderate route. We've seen with the Supreme Court choices that President Bush wants to have a conservative administration, and he's comfortable with conservative choices. Would a Democratic-led Senate go for that? And that's, I think, one of the real questions and one of the reasons why Gonzalez is staying as long as he has.
The fight to come might be worse than the fight that he's got.
It might be.
Yeah. All right. Mike, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks, Ben.
Let's go now to, this is Danny. Danny from Kentucky.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I'd like to talk about the changes in Mitch McConnell's power since he's not only become the minority leader, but also he backed the local Ann Northrup down here for the House of Representatives. She lost. She also backed her for the governor primary and the Republican, and she lost that also. So I'll take my answer off the air.
And Mitch McConnell, of course, up for re-election this coming cycle.
Right, and I still haven't seen a top-tier Democrat running against McConnell, but it looks like the Republicans could very well lose the governorship that they waited 40 or 35 years to take, Governor Ernie Fletcher. I think one of the reasons that Mitch McConnell backed Ann Northrup for governor is that they feel that the incumbent Republican governor, Ernie Fletcher, is damaged goods, could lose in November. I don't think it's a fault with McConnell and McConnell's choice, but the fact that Fletcher is just, you know, so vulnerable to defeat. As far as McConnell himself goes, he's very popular among his Republican colleagues in the Senate, more so than Bill Frist was, the previous Republican leader, and McConnell should sail to re-election in November.
As long as we're talking about Republicans, we have a minute left, Ken, and there's new figures out, a WMUR-CNN poll on Republicans in New Hampshire. Some interesting results.
Well, the big news, I guess, and it's something that we've been seeing for quite some time, is that Mitt Romney, who's been spending freely, advertising freely, heavily in New Hampshire, has gone from back in the pack, certainly a weak third in the pack, to leading in the polls. Again, you know, polls 8 months out is kind of crazy, but the fact is that the previous front runners, the Giuliani and John McCain, seem to be falling down, and McCain and Romney, who's spending as freely as he is, he could very well be the nominee. Forget about what his contradictions in his past, the so-called flip-flops. He is really winning over a lot of Republicans who are just like a fresh face there.
But in 15 seconds, what about the new fresh face, Fred Thompson?
Well, I have a feeling right now Fred Thompson is as popular as he'll ever be. Once he gets in the race, we may not see him as dynamic as he is on Law & Order.
Well, Ken Rudin, thanks very much, and let's do it again next Tuesday. Wednesday, whenever day this is.
Thanks, Neil.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. He also writes the weekly Political Junkie column and has a regular politics column podcast called It's All Politics, and you can find both of them at npr.org. I'm Neil Conan, NPR News in Washington. And take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land.